Trigger warning. The following discussion contains sensitive topics related to eating disorders. Please proceed with caution and prioritize your mental well-being. In this insightful two-part episode, Lisa chats with Riley Batt, Paralympian and wheelchair rugby star, along with Natasha Price, elite athlete and Gold Coast Para Sports Star of the Year. Let's jump into part one.
Are you sick of the same old disability stereotypes? We were too, so we did something about it. Welcome to That Was Unexpected, the disability lifestyle podcast for everyone. Brought to you by Youngcare and hosted by me, Lisa Cox. Join our amazing guests as we delve into topics that don't often hit the headlines. So let's do this. Prepare for the unexpected. If you're low vision like me or have other accessibility requirements, check out our show notes. Before we get started, we'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of land on which we record. We pay respects to the elders, past, present, and emerging.
Riley and Tash, welcome to That Was Unexpected. Really good to have you both here.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Looking forward to today.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Health, fitness, all that good stuff. Really looking forward to talking about it as well because it's been a huge part of my life, pre-disability and with disabilities, and there's this misconception that people's disabilities don't have any interest in sports and fitness, unless they're going to the Paralympics, of course.
Absolutely.
So we'll get into that today. But firstly, can you tell me a bit about you both, your disabilities, all those sorts of things?
Riley, you go first.
Oh, I was going to say ladies first. All right. I'll bore the audience with talking about myself. No, look, for all the viewers at home, for me, I was born with a limb deficiency, a type of deformity. So when mum and dad got the ultrasounds of me and mum's tummy, it showed, that they got told that I was a perfectly healthy baby boy. But when I entered the world, I was missing both legs pretty high up and missing a few fingers on each hand. So it was a huge shock for my parents, my grandparents, my family in general. But I'm very, very thankful for my family. They never wrapped me in cotton wool. They accepted me for who I am and they let me live a perfectly, I guess, a normal life and treated me like a normal boy. So yes, the disabilities obviously had its boundaries and I'm sure we can talk about that today. But yep. My disability hasn't stopped me doing much in life. So that's me.
That's awesome. And Tash, you're like me in that you acquired your disability.
Yes. So I am, my story is obviously completely different to Riley's. I went to bed and woke up the next day blind in the right eye. Had absolutely no idea what was going on. Within a couple of weeks of that, I was completely blind in both eyes. Couldn't even see the difference between night and day. And then within a month, I was paralyzed from the waist down. And it took them a really, really long time to figure out what was going on with me. It turned out that I have a condition that is a little bit like multiple sclerosis. So it affects the spinal cord, but also the optic nerve. And it's called neuromyelitis optica. And at the time that I was diagnosed, I was told that I'd have 5 years to live. So 16 years on, I'm still here and I'm, as you can guess from being on this podcast, fighting fit and doing really, really well. So, I've spent time quadriplegic, completely paralyzed from the waist down and from the neck down. It's the kind of disease that comes in peaks and troughs. So things can be very, very changeable for me. But, you know, the one thing I've learned on this journey is that things aren't guaranteed and got to make the most of every single thing that life throws at us. So, using this stuff to my advantage, I guess.
Yeah, couldn't agree with you more. You've got to make the most of it. And it does, the proverbial hits the fan, I guess.
So yes.
Were you into fitness? I know you're a massive para athlete now, but were you into all of that pre-disability?
Yes. Always. So sport's always been part of my life. My dad was a professional football soccer player in the UK. And it's just in my blood from the moment I was born. I was a sprinter, junior sprinter, and, absolutely loved it back then. And the thought of doing long distance stuff when I was younger used to absolutely kill me. So when I became a marathoner as a wheelchair athlete, I think it was a big shock to everybody. But, you know, it's funny how everything that's happened to me with my health really wanted me to take on that challenge. So I still wanted to do something sporty and something, you know, truly incredible. But I really, really wanted that extra challenge of pushing 42 kilometers with my arms. Some would say that's totally batshit crazy, but there you go, it is.
Yeah, I'm at a totally batshit crazy camp.
Yes, yeah, you've got to put those challenges out there and you know, see what you can truly do. And I took on that challenge. But so yes, sport has always been something that I loved. As a teenager and a 20 something, I was a professional dancer. So yeah, it's just health and fitness is just part of my life, and it always has been.
Yep. Love it.
Yeah, 100%. You guys are both pushing boundaries in your own respective ways, and I didn't cover it at the beginning, but can you tell me a little bit about all of your amazing accomplishments?
You take this one first then, Riley.
I'm so used to letting the ladies first, but I'll take it again. So for me, yeah, I've been an Australian wheelchair rugby player for 22 years, and it's been an amazing career. I've had so much fun doing it. I've been to 5 Paralympic Games. Hopefully by the time this podcast comes out, we've qualified for our 6th Paralympic Games, obviously in Paris in 2024 this year. But it's been tough. It has been. It's, you know, there's been a lot of sacrifices. There's been, you know, a lot of blood, sweat and tears put in the training, but it's been so worth it as well. Representing Australia for 22 years, being able to captain the Australian wheelchair rugby team, being able to co-captain the whole Australian Paralympic team in the Tokyo 2020 Paralympic Games, fly the flag at the opening ceremony. There's so many things that I've been able to achieve through sport and playing wheelchair rugby that I wouldn't have achieved if I didn't push my boundaries. So wheelchair rugby's brought me a lot. Won 2 gold medals. We've been lucky enough to win a silver medal as well. And I'm hoping that we can potentially win a 3rd gold medal this year, and I'd be happy to retire off that.
Oh, yeah. What about you, Tat?
So I'm still pretty much at the start of this journey. Haven't quite made it to the level Riley has with the Paralympics yet, but, you know, fingers crossed, that's where I'm hoping to get to. I was blessed to be able to break the Queensland record in the 100 and 400 metres last year. So that's a record that has stood for, 27 years or something. So I was wow, really, really quite proud of that achievement. And last year, December, went to the World Ability Sport Games and represented Thailand on the track there. Came away with gold for the 200. I'm trying to think, 200, and then bronze for the 1 and 400. So I'm really proud of where I'm going in my career, and I was hoping to qualify for the Paralympics this year, but I may have missed my opportunity due to COVID, but we'll see what happens. There's one more chance for me to get those qualifying times, and I'm hoping that it will happen. But if it doesn't, I'll just keep working towards it, and next time it'll happen eventually, I'm confident.
So when did you decide to get into sport and those sorts of things, I suppose, as a child with disabilities? Was it something you always wanted to do from day dot? Like, yeah, I'm off to the Paralympics. So was it just something that you only really realised as a teenager, or how did it work?
For me, my dad was had a huge sporting background. He was a triathlete. He competed in any sport possible. He actually won. I'm from Port Macquarie. My hometown's Port Macquarie, and he actually won in the early 90s the King of Sport in Port Macquarie. So they did about 12 different sports, and they got points, and he won all that. And he's been very successful at Olympic distance triathlons, and he's just a competitive sportsman. So growing up with the disability, as I said, my parents tried not to wrap me in cotton wool. They tried to just let me do what I wanted to do. And I was always into motorbikes. My pop was into motorbikes, and my friends were into motorbikes. So I was racing around on motorbikes and quad bikes and whatnot and water skiing. But obviously you can't do that every day. So yeah. Dad would play, I remember in the lounge room, he'd play classic catches with me and different, sort of ball sports and whatever it would be. And I absolutely loved that. And I always wanted to beat him. You know, I've only got 3 fingers on one hand. I wasn't very good at catching, but I would work so hard to try to beat him in a catching match or whatever it would be. But growing up, I didn't want to be a Paralympian. I didn't actually want to really do anything, I guess, in the disability world. I just wanted to do normal sports. So I remember, you know, at the school oval, I remember trying to play soccer. And this is primary school. And, you know, I tried to go on the actual, on the ground playing soccer, but I'm only using my hands because I'm crawling around the ground, right? So every time it's a handball. And look, the teachers would have to, talk to the kids and say, look, you just let him play with his hands. But then they got brutal and they're kicking me in the face and whatnot. And,
Jesus.
It got pretty brutal. So I went to goalie. And then I actually, like, my parents got me involved in a soccer club and I used to go train in goalie. But the thing is, then obviously on the ground, kids would just chip it over my head. So that didn't really work. And then obviously, you know, tried to play cricket on the oval or footy or whatever. And I just tried to do that. And, you know, looking back now, I'm going, what were you doing, Riley? Like, you were never, ever going to be able to compete. But I wanted to be a normal boy.
It's about inclusion, though, isn't it?
100%. Yeah. So I used a skateboard to get around in my early days. That was my mode of transport. I wouldn't get in a wheelchair. Prosthetic legs were very tough for me.
Yep.
So I used a skateboard to get around. But the skateboard actually became a bit of a sport for me. My dad was a builder, so he built half pipes and grinds and all these kind of things in our backyard. And it was like the cool spot to go. So all my friends would come over in the afternoon.
That sounds like so much fun.
Hopefully Dad built the ramps properly because all my mates hitting these ramps. Hopefully there wasn't any nails hanging out or whatnot. But I sort of took on skateboarding as a bit of a sport then and loved it. And but then there came a time where my parents tried to get me in a wheelchair and I didn't want to do it. I thought wheelchairs were for disabled people and they were embarrassing. And I'm probably 9-10 year old boy going, nah, I'm not doing that. That's embarrassing. Then there came a time I was about 12, 13 years old where this opportunity to play the sport of wheelchair rugby came up and it was at school sport. And I went to this wheelchair rugby game with my able-bodied friends and you could all jump in these wheelchair rugby chairs and all these, my able-bodied friends jumped in and were bashing into each other and having the time of their life. But I sat on the sidelines and went, no, I'm not jumping in that. That's embarrassing. And everyone will think I'm different. A week later and I was down swimming down the beach near Port Macquarie and threw my skateboard in the bushes when I went down to the beach and went for a swim and came back up and some bugger had stolen my skateboard and that was my mode of transport and something just clicked that time when I went, you know what, Riley, let's give this wheelchair a go. Let's give it a go in life. So the next week went and played wheelchair rugby with my able-bodied friends and absolutely killed it. And for the first time in my life, I actually felt like I was on the same level playing field as people playing sport. And it was just huge for me. So from there, my sport journey just absolutely blossomed and, you know, representing New South Wales and Australia.
You know, it's not easy. And I think as much as we fight and advocate for the world to be more accessible, it's a fact of life that it just isn't. And in order to be able to get around and navigate the world we live in, that strength and those skills and that ability to be able to make our lives easier so that we can lead a normal life is really, really important. So, yeah.
100%. It's so much a mental game as well.
It is.
Shit we have to deal with.
Yeah, totally.
Not only that as well, like we're obviously talking about training here and fitness and whatnot. I think having a disability is not only about going to a gym or going to sport for the fitness side of things, it's for the community as well. It's for that mental side of things. It's learning from each other, right? Mm-hmm. Like I know in my sport of wheelchair rugby, the amount of people I've learned with disabilities who have overcome huge obstacles in life, like, you know, both of you have, you learn from each other how to adapt, how to tackle things during the day. Like, you know, I see someone come into our sport who's new who might struggle to transfer, you know, from a wheelchair to their car or to bed or whatever, and they speak to other people how the tips and tricks they do it, and they're doing it within no time. So it's not only about the strength, it's about a community. It's about finding others like-minded, being happy, being out there, being social. That's one of the massive things too. So even if you're going to a gym or going to, let's say, a social wheelchair basketball game, you don't have to be the best out there. You don't have to, you don't even have to, you know, improve, you know, tenfold. Go out there and just have a go, have some fun.
It's crazy, isn't it? I think back to before I was involved with Parasports, and I didn't know anybody else that was a wheelchair user. Like, really hadn't even met anybody in my life who was a wheelchair user. And I guess my own internalized ableism meant that I didn't want to think of myself as being part of that community. But when I eventually embraced it and got involved, I learned so much, and my life changed in extraordinary ways just because of the people that I was surrounding myself with, because of the community that I'd become part of. And there's so many opportunities and incredible things that have happened in my life purely because I put myself in the situation where I was then surrounded by people that were doing, you know, great things regardless of their disability. And like my coach and friend Adam, he's taught me so much that I could not have learned from being surrounded by people without disabilities. And I feel very, very, very blessed for that. So it is about community. It's all about community. Yeah.
I think it's about self-confidence as well too.
Like, 100%.
I know growing up for me with a disability, my teenage years were dark. And a lot of people didn't see that because they saw such a positive, happy Riley, but I was struggling. Like, I was struggling with even going to a gym with what people thought of me, and I didn't like that because at the end of the day, you're in a wheelchair, you do look different. I understand that, you know, like, because you go to a gym, you might see, you know, might see someone in a wheelchair, but then you see 50 others who are able-bodied. So you always are, I guess, that bit of a black sheep there.
Yeah.
But I thought people looked upon that in a bad way, but I had to learn that they're not looking at you in a bad way. You're just like, oh, the guy on the chair here, cool. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they're not always looking at you like that. So for me, like, I think for me, playing sport was huge to accept who I was and overcome who I was. And it took me a while. Like, even when I was 18, 19 years old, I was still worried about my self-image and, you know, what, obviously you're looking at girlfriends at those times and what girls are going to think of you and just friends in general. And it was hard. It was dark. And it took me until probably I was, let's say 20, 21 years old to sort of come out of my shell. And I always look back now, and if I didn't get involved in some sort of sport or fitness or community, what would I be doing? Would I have come out of that shell? I don't know. And I think I am so excited that I've come out of the shell, because I used to wish I had legs every single day growing through my teenage years. Like, why am I different? Why, you know, why was I, you know, born like this? What have I done in running life? But now I look back and go, I don't want legs. I'm happy with my disability. Yeah, I'm happy with who I am. Yeah, there's challenges out there. 100% there's challenges. But then the day, I'm different. I've lived an amazing life. I've learned so many things. And I am who I am because of what happened to me. So now I'm thankful.
I tell you what I think's really, really interesting about what you just said is the parallels between being a teenager or a young person who does have a disability and a young person who doesn't have a disability. The challenges may be different. They may be, you know, completely different, but still have the same kind of thoughts and feelings and fears and worries about what people are looking at and worries about judgment and God knows what else. Well, whilst I was a teenager who didn't have a disability, I had I actually grew up with eating disorders. I had really bad anorexia, and those are because of the worries that I had about what other judgment other people were placing on me. So it's interesting to realize what people's struggles are, regardless of their, you know, disability or what they've got going on in their lives. We all have them, and it's a level playing field with regards to emotions and how we treat ourselves as human beings. Sometimes we've got to stop giving ourselves such a hard time and worrying what everybody else thinks.
We do. That goes for everybody, disability or not. Just go easy on yourself.
Yeah.
So, in your experiences, both of you, what misconceptions do you find, whether it's personally going to the gym or at the Paralympics, what misconceptions are there about fitness and health for people with disabilities? Oh, it's an easier game, or it's what do you think?
That's a hard one. That's a hard one to answer. And like, hopefully I guess I'm answering this correctly, I guess. But there's, I think what you were saying before is like you're going to the gym being fit and then everyone thinks you're training for a Paralympic Games.
Yeah.
I think there's a little bit of a misconception there where they think, I think people who are Paralympians or whatnot have sort of a bit of an easy road. They think just because they have a disability and they're training, they can make the Paralympics. It might have been like that years and years ago. I'm not sure. But in this day and age, it's not easy. Like sitting here right now, like you guys might not see this in the podcast, but Natasha is, I don't know if this is a good thing. She's jacked. Like she's got some guns on her. She's looking fit as, and she's talking about struggling to qualify for a Paralympic Games. Okay.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, that's how hard it is. It's, you can't just rock up and go to a gym once a day or just do it socially. You have to commit like an elite athlete.
Oh, for sure.
I understand the pool for Paralympians is a lot smaller than, say, an Olympian. You know, let's say you're a Paralympic swimmer. You obviously, the pool to get selected, you know, the athletes around you is going to be a lot lower than an Olympic athlete because there's more, obviously, able-bodied athletes out there in the world. But 20% of this world has a disability. So it's not like we're talking a handful. It's still a lot of people. So I think there's a big misconception, or in my opinion anyway, that people go, oh, you're a Paralympian. Yeah, congratulations. You know, it's like a feel good. It's give you a little clap.
Mm-hmm.
We work bloody hard.
Oh, yeah.
We work bloody hard. And you've seen that firsthand. So I think that's probably one of the misconceptions, what I think bugs me a little bit in this world. But as we were talking about earlier in the show, that Australia is doing a really good job of it, though. You know, where I think there's other countries, I'm not going to name those countries, around the world who just completely pushed the Paralympics aside and could not give a shit.
Okay, so if you can both tell us, what do you reckon your most challenging times have been as para athletes? Because everyone assumes that it surely must be the fact that you're in a wheelchair, but I know for me anyway, it's the wheelchair's got nothing to do with it. What have been your most challenging times as athletes?
Oh, God, I've got a couple of stories with this, but I think most recently it's been my health issues outside of my disability. So I recently had to have a feeding tube removed, which had been there for 12 and a half years, and I had some complications afterwards. And it was supposed to be a quick procedure with a quick healing outcome, and it didn't quite happen like that. And as a wheelchair racer, I'm in one of those three-wheeled wheelchairs with a long fork out front, so I'm always in a bent over kind of position. And I found that anytime I was in the chair, that the hole that had been left in my stomach was leaking stomach acid, and it was burning my skin, and it was third degree burns. It was really, really bad. Yeah. And I was having to train through that because I had Sydney Marathon coming up and some big comps coming up, and it was hell. It was hell. And I think trying to find a place mentally where I could keep pushing through and continue training, knowing that I had some, you know, I had my first world major marathon coming up, obviously at Sydney, and knowing that I had to keep going no matter what through that was really, really a struggle. It takes a huge amount of, I guess, discipline to understand that, yes, there's pain there and it probably isn't a good thing, but it wasn't something that was going to cause me long-term damage as an injury would if I kept continuing on and doing my training and competing in that competition. As it turned out, the marathon was a nightmare, and I had to pull out halfway through. So putting myself through that probably wasn't the best thing in the end. But I then had to have a subsequent surgery to fix the hole in my stomach, because the amount I'm using my core every single day it's not, I guess, normal. You know, most people aren't going out as wheelchair users to train at an elite level and compete at an elite level. So I had to have surgery to fix the hole, and it's been a struggle. It's definitely been a challenging time to continue on working as hard as I have done, and knowing that I've had all these competitions coming up that I've had to put on a bit of a back burner and not perform at my best because of the things my body's been through recently. So it's definitely, people think it's so simple and straightforward, and that you know, as para athletes, we can keep just pushing ourselves in the same way as perhaps we could pre-disability, or the same as our non-disabled counterparts can. But there's always these outside factors that also dictate to us what we're able to do on a daily basis that have to be considered as well. So that I think, it's been an interesting ride that I'm coming out the other side of now. So that's good.
Good stuff. And you've got a nice scar.
Yes, it's hilarious. Awesome. It looks like I've got two belly buttons. I often see I wear something high waisted, and then I've got this weird belly button that's at the top of my abdomen. It looks interesting, but hey, show it off and be proud of those scars. Yeah. They make me interesting and unique, I guess.
Oh, sure. What about you, Riley? What's been one of your more challenging times as a para athlete?
Yeah, I'm probably going to sound a little bit ungrateful with my ones, but I think it's just the ups and downs of sport. Being able to succeed and accomplish every goal I've set, and I'm very proud of that. But there's, you know, everyone sees the happy times and the good times, and everyone looks at me and goes, "You're such a positive person, Riley. You've lived a life."
You're so inspirational.
You say so inspirational. You hear that all the time. But there's tough times. There is tough times, and that's where you're always going to look after your mental health. And I've learnt so much more about myself in the last probably 2 years, going through some of the toughest times in my life, you know, with some personal things going on, but with sport, not knowing, you know, if you want to go on, you know, what else is there to achieve? You've ticked everything. What's after sport? Because it's been part of my life since I was 12 years old. Who am I? Who am I after sport? Mm. You know, with a lot of sports, you do get pushed aside afterwards. You know, like, thank you, thanks for your time, see you later, pretty much. And that's hard. I see a lot of Olympians, Paralympians do that. So it's sort of trying to find who is Riley and trying to set up, some sort of something for when I finish sport eventually, you know, whether it be this year, whether it be in 4 years, whether it be in 8 years, I don't know when that's going to be, but that is tough. But I think the biggest challenge I'm overcoming still is the recent one, and it's my shoulder injury. I've had a lot of shoulder injuries. I've had a lot of injuries, but this one is just lingering, and it's like a roller coaster. Yeah, you're at the top of the roller coaster thinking, oh, everything's all good, I'm back, I'm gonna be able to do some strength stuff again, I'm gonna be able to lift my game to the next level again, and then you come crashing down. And it's, you have to be patient. You have to just take one day at a time and just trust the process. And I don't like that. I'm a person who I just want to get to that. I want to get to that peak.
Isn't that something that's apparent in all athletes? We don't know how to be patient.
it's very painful, but we have to be, right? And we have to worry about our body. And I'm also worried about my body after I finish sport, because at the end of the day, what we're talking about before, I want to be independent. I want to be able to go out and do everything I want to achieve. Like, I'm a country boy, so I love going in the country and you know, whether doing whatever. And to do that, I have to be crawling around the ground. I'm jumping up on tractors, you know, excavators, quad bikes, fixing stuff. I have to be able to use my body. And if I've ruined it, well, then there's none of that. And then my mental health is going to go downhill. So it's at the moment just overcoming this shoulder injury. I'm probably going to have to do surgery and just time that. That's also going to be a challenge as well, because being in a wheelchair, having shoulder, and I have to get my elbow surgery at the same time, you know, that's 6-8 months recovery.
Yeah.
That's taking your independence away, where most, you know, able bods can, if they get shoulder surgery, they can walk around still. Yeah, they'll whinge about it, but they can still walk around. Well, for us, we're pushing one-handed and we're either going around in circles or asking people for help. And I pride myself on that I have gained enough knowledge and independence in my life that I don't ask for any help. There's obviously things that would help me out in life and make things easier, but I really don't like asking for help. So I'm very nervous at those times asking people for help. Yeah. And I'm a person who says sorry every 2 seconds as well. So I'm sorry, can you help me? I'm sorry. So
yeah, that's me too.
Do you think a lot of that independence came from your father? And I say that because you told me a story just before we came on air before about growing up with a disability and how he didn't wrap you in cotton wool, like you said before, but could you elaborate on that just a moment?
Definitely. I've got some very good role models, and they're my parents and my grandparents. My grandparents aren't with us anymore, and that's been quite tough for me. But my pop and my dad especially were two amazing people who have helped me be the person I am today. And I always remember this story. I remember it clear as day. I can't remember the age, but I think I was about 3 or 4 years old and just finished whatever we're doing. Dad just finished work and Dad was a builder, and I remember being in his ute and we went down to the beach because I used to love swimming in the ocean with him, and it was a hot day, so he had to pick me up on his shoulders so I didn't crawl along the tarmac because that would have burnt my bum. So he crawled along, so he picked me up and took me to the soft sand at the start of the beach. And he used to always take me down to the water so I could just go straight in the water. This day he put me down in the top of the beach in the soft sand. And as you do when you're 3 or 4 years old, you chuck an absolute tanty because you're not getting your own way. So I chucked a tantrum, and I remember it clear as day doing that. And Dad, you know, my tantrum was, Dad, pick me up and take me down to the water. And he said, no, you can get down there yourself, mate. And he shoved me along, you know, letting me chuck an absolute tantrum. Meanwhile, there's people on, you know, this beach in Port Macquarie, where it's a pretty populated beach, looking at my dad going, you are an absolute arsehole of a father. Pick your poor disabled son up and take him to the water. Anyway, he shoved me along and I went, got down to the water, had a swim by myself, and then he made me crawl back up the sand looking like a crumb cutlet. And I think you look at times like that in life and you look back and, you know, would I do that? Absolutely. Do I think that would have been tough for him to do? Absolutely. But it's times like that where you're learning that you can push those boundaries. And he knew I could. He obviously saw me crawling around the house and doing bits and pieces. I used to go to the job site with him and hang off all the, you know, scaffolding and whatever he was building, you know, like a monkey. So he knew I could do it. Yeah. But it's just making me believe that I can do that. And I still do it to this day. I pull up at the beach and park my car and I wheel as far as I can to the sand, and then I'll put my sand and my sand away. I put my wheelchair away in the bushes or wherever it be, and I'll crawl down the beach. And yeah, it sucks when it's low tide because you've got to crawl a lot
it's
further.
It's a long way.
And it also sucks crawling back up because you've got sand absolutely all over you. Right. Yeah, and it's
getting into interesting places.
Yeah, the car ride home, it's feeling like you've got sandpaper in your crutch. But I still love doing that. And would I have, you know, if Dad didn't push me to, you know, to overcome these challenges, would I be doing it? Well, I don't know. And that's the same as my pop was talking about, my dad and my pop. My pop was a role model as well, and he bought me my first quad bike when I was 3.5 years old, and he told my parents, oh, I've bought this for Riley. And they're like, why the bloody hell have you bought him a quad bike? He's not going to be able to ride it. Sent me the brochure and everything, and I remember going to bed reading it with mum and dad every night, and I knew exactly how this quad bike worked. We went to our farm, what's on the Hawkesbury River in Sydney, and I jumped on it, and they couldn't get me off it for 3 days. I used to ride around, wet my pants on it because I didn't want to stop to go take a leak. I used to drive past the house and say Vegemite sandwich with the crust cut off, and
that's awesome.
They'd stuff it in my mouth and I'd be chewing at it while I've got my hands on the handlebars. And it's, you know, it's times like that where you're just so thankful in life that you've had some great role models to push your boundaries.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to part one of Unseen Victories Beyond the Paralympic Glory. You can hear more from Riley and Natasha in part two, dropping soon.
Thanks for listening to That Was Unexpected. If you liked what you heard and you want to hear more, then hit subscribe wherever you get your fix. Have any questions or topics that you'd love for us to tackle? Great! Email podcast@youngcare.com.au. We can't wait to hear from you. Check out our show notes for transcripts, video recordings, and to find out more about our guests, plus the useful resources they share. You can reach us on Facebook, Instagram, X, and LinkedIn at YoungCareAuz. Let's not forget, an inclusive community is everyone's business. So let's keep working together to break down barriers and smash some stereotypes.